Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Today's podcast is titled Political Polarization, What Caused It? Part 1. Recorded in 2022, Dennis McQuestion, former clinical professor of corporate governance and executive director for the Institute for Excellence in Corporate Governance at the University of Texas at Dallas, with speaker and author Jim Cathcart, psychologist Dr. Terry Paulson, former chair of Amnesty International USA Chip Pitts, and author Robert Hall, discuss America's deep political polarization following the COVID-19 pandemic and the presidential election of 2020. We hope you enjoy today's episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
Hello, I'm Dennis McQuestion, and it's no secret that America is politically polarized at this point. Now, the question is, why is that? And a better question is, are there solutions to it? Some of us believe, and I think most of you watching would believe, that this is not good for our democracy. So the question is, on our part two of this program, what do we do with it? But on this program, what are the causes of political polarization and what are the impacts on it? So we've got three incredible guests joining us. And right now I'm going to have my co-host, Jim Cathcart, introduce them. Jim?
Thank you, Dennis. Our first guest is Dr. Terry Paulson. He is a psychologist, a columnist, professional speaker, and he's the author of The Optimism Advantage and also The Dinner, the political conversation your mother told you never to have. He's a good friend of mine, past president of both the Global Speakers Federation and the National Speakers Association. He's been inducted into their NSA's CPAE, Council of Peers Award for Excellence, Hall of Fame. He's a regular op-ed columnist for townhall.com and politicrossing.com. And I just like to say welcome, Terry.
Thank you, Jim.
Chip Pitts is a leadership, governance, and corporate responsibility expert who has taught at Oxford, Stanford, and other universities in the West and Asia. He's the former chair of Amnesty International USA and the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, as well as other nonprofits dealing with human rights, civil liberties, international development, and social and environmental sustainability.
Great to be here, Jim. Thank you for having me.
You bet. And Robert Hall is a recovering CEO. His words. Robert's a noted author, consultant, and speaker on relationships, formerly as co-founder and CEO of an international customer relationship management firm. Ernst & Young named him a finalist in the SMU Entrepreneur of the Year. The Southern Methodist University's Cox Business School named his company one of the fastest growing private companies in Dallas. He's authored over 200 published articles, been in Forbes, New York Times, CEO Magazine, Huffington Post. His latest book, This Land of Strangers, The Relationship Crisis That Imperils Home, Work, Politics, and Faith. It's been called the most important book of the decade. He's a coach to corporate and nonprofit CEOs, and I want to welcome him today. Robert, thank you for joining us.
Great to be with you, Jim. Great to be with everyone. Thanks.
Well, you wrote a very provocative article titled Hijacked, and I'd love for you to tell us what caused you to write the article and what are the primary points you want to make there.
Sure. Great to be with everyone. Hijacked's kind of a strong term. But I chose that term because increasingly, as I hear people voice their concerns about where we are today as a country, that's either the term they use or that's what they describe. And I'm reminded of 9/11, UA Flight 93, where four terrorists hijacked a plane, and within 30 minutes, four passengers basically organized and breached the cockpit to take the plane back and to end the hijacking. Now, we all know the outcome was unfortunate. The plane perished, but it probably saved either the U.S. Capitol or the White House. And that word hijack has kind of three parts. It's someone seizes control, either an individual or small group seizes control, and then they change the direction. And they change it in the direction that the one or small group wants. So they take it over. And I'm hearing a lot of people these days have and voice those concerns about democracy. And we all know that there's a lot of concern about that. 58% of people, voters today, say they're concerned that our democracy might collapse. And it's interesting, a recent Battleground survey found when they asked people, what are you worried about or what stresses you? The number one answer was division within the country. So there's a lot of concern. It's what David Brooks has called, we're being ruled by the radicals. And what that means is the radicals dominate the airwaves in social media, in traditional media, often in politics and so forth. So people are very much concerned about that. One final point I would make is that a year or two ago, we talked about this polarization very much in terms of politics, D.C. or state capitals or city government, but it's become much more local.
Chips, what's your thought on that?
Well, I certainly agree that it's a terrible issue right now. In fact, I think it's an existential issue. You know, America used to be famous for truth, justice, and the American way. And I think all of those values are in great jeopardy today. Just to react to something that Robert just said, you know, the hijacked metaphor sounds good, but in that case, it was good. Flight 93 was definitely a heroic effort of the passengers to use violence against violence. But using violence against an effort to overturn an election, which happened, of course, on January the 6th, and we now know it was more of a conspiracy. It's actually being litigated as a conspiracy involving a lot of actors. That's counter to the rule of law, counter to democracy, to majority rule. And so I think there's a limit to that metaphor. And I do agree, though, that we do need to have citizens get back to talking, as Terry's book, The Dinner, apparently, I haven't read it yet, but I will, recommends. We definitely need to do more of that. I would say the radicalization is qualitatively different on one side. You know, Democrats have to appeal to the moderate because they're a coalition of much more diverse identities. Whereas the Republican identities have really crystallized. It's an older white Christian constituency. And therefore, they can be, and they have had their identities weaponized over the recent years, starting really decades ago, but certainly after 9/11. So I think there are qualitative differences here between the parties, between the identities. There are polarization, and the thing that should concern us all is affective polarization, how it's not just partisan sentiment, but hostility toward the other party.
I'm gonna butt in with you there just a second. That's sure. Well said. Terry, I noticed some of the expressions on your face as Schiff was talking. So your turn, my friend.
Well, and number one, I think there's a lot to agree with. We are divided. There is significantly low trust right now in our system, probably from both sides. We also have been isolated. When you take COVID over the last 2 years, what that has done is move people into their homes. They have been watching their own sources of information. And as a result of that, there's not much dialogue across any divide. And then you have what I affectionately call Potomac fever. You have anybody who ever gets elected, they get there and they act like emotional teenagers in search of any issue that allows us to create panic, concern, crisis. I think basically the media feeds off of that. I remember an NBC producer once told me, who said, you know, we need crisis. He said, for every day of the year, we have past footage of past disasters and past crises, because if there isn't one, we need to lead with an anniversary of an old one. So let's understand something. I think one of the things that Robert talked about in his article, which I think is very true, we are the rise of the independent. And what we have is we've got a lot of people passionately disagree in areas that affect our strategy and basic policies and what direction we want to take. But a very large number of people who are frightened of both sides. They're sitting in their living room wanting to throw pillows at the extremes that are out there. And the real challenge is, how do we find a way to empower them? And that maybe that'll be part of the focus of it. Martin Seligman has said the depression of our age has learned helplessness. That's part of what we're facing right now. Media, politicians that capitalize on crisis, and a country that has been isolated, and a lot of people really, they're impacted by a media and by the isolation.
But the idea of people thinking more like themselves and moving to places more like themselves Terry, focus on that, because it seems to me like that's working against it.
Well, certainly it's working against the united sense of our country. And you're actually having people talk about splitting up the United States of having certain areas. Or they want to take part of Oregon and attach it to Idaho. I mean, there's a lot of heartfelt feeling of disengagement and anger at people. And there's very few ways of really handling that right now. And that's one of the challenges. I'm meeting once a month, three conservatives and three more progressive members of our community. We meet once a month and try to understand each other's positions on issues. And it can be frustrating at times, but as soon as you say, I'm not trying to convince you because I probably won't, but let me try and explain why I feel this way, it creates an opportunity for us to have some of that dialogue and to realize, as I think one of the concerns are, and when you talk about moderation, I'm not for moderation in opinion necessarily, but certainly demonizing people who disagree with you is not an effective tool for our country. I mean, we were built to protect individuals to have diversity of opinion. From an overarching strong government, we wanted individuals protected to be able to communicate. And so I think we all, I don't care what side you are on any given issue, our job is to leave room for difference, because there's tremendous value in tension. It's intention. If there wasn't any argument, we wouldn't need any politics. It'd be obvious what to do. It's
true.
Getting heard, getting a chance to look at both sides, that's very valuable.
Yeah, well, thank you, Terry. And Robert, I want to come back to you with this. It seems to me that the issue under the issue is people caring enough or respecting enough of each other that they make room for understanding each other. Because when the immediate polarization takes place and you demonize the person opposing your point of view, there's no solution available to you. What's your thought on that, Robert?
I totally concur with that. And I think what I've seen and what I believe is really important is, how do we stay engaged? And I would make a distinction between where we are ideologically. So we might be progressive or we might be conservative, and where we are relational. It's what I call being a relational moderate. A relational moderate can exist anywhere along that continuum. We do not need to leave our opinions at the door. And I very much agree, Terry, we're very unlikely to change anyone else's opinion. We thrive on our differences. The distinction is, I really think we have been in a position of division and polarization, but what we've moved to is demonization. And when we get to the point of demonization, it's all the other side. And all of our effort goes on to condemning the other side. And to me, the first place we need to look is in the mirror. What about our side? I would be so elated if everybody on all sides could spend more of their energy on how I clean up my own act. How do I listen more proactively? How do I try to hear, and how do I try to find common solutions? To me, that's where the opportunity is. And we've always been divided. That's not new. But social media, cable TV, COVID, almost a perfect storm of things that has reinforced maybe some of our worst tendencies. So to me, that's the key. Stay engaged. As Terry mentioned, working with others, listening for others, that's how we reclaim the value of our diversity.
Thank you. And Chip, I want to come back to you on this. It appears, you know, looking at all the papers that we've read in preparation for this, the attitude that our democracy is in danger of collapse, this is among younger people mostly, I was looking at Republican, Independent, Democrat, 62%, 57%, 56%. So in other words, all three of them feel there's a strong vulnerability in our democracy. And there were even a couple of these where they said, we're in danger of a second civil war. Good heavens. You know, that's not nearly as high in the ratings, but they felt that was a sincere problem. Even the possibility of a state or more seceding from the union under their, you know, their tenure as a young adult, that's enough to make me pull my hair out and go screaming for the exit. What's your take on it, Chip?
Me too, Jim. I mean, it's frightening. It's absolutely frightening. And there's a history behind this, and there's structural incentives to our politics that make it even worse. You know, the history, of course, is when the Civil Rights Act and Voting Rights Act were passed in the mid-1960s, the Dixiecrat Democrats went to the Republican Party as a result, as LBJ knew would happen. And then you had Nixon's Southern strategy. So there's a racial dimension to that. And a lot of people in the Democratic Party especially are concerned because they feel targeted by the 34 laws that passed last year, basically encouraging voter suppression and voter subversion, putting election officials in place that are partisan to monitor the polls and to actually overturn the will of the voters. That's happened last year. There are three times as many of those bills this year. And so the prospect of civil war, I personally don't think it's likely, but it is a possibility. And it's one we should take seriously because the scholars that have looked at this, at least some, not all of them, but there are several books that have written the indicia where you have identity-based politics that lead to this sort of hate, they do predict civil wars. And we now have globally a historic level of civil wars, 55 currently pending in the world. So it's not without possibility that this could happen. That means we should take cognizance of that. And yes, definitely work across the aisle. But it's structurally difficult to do that when you have structural imperatives that basically give, for example, in the Senate, someone from California gets 166th the representation of someone from Wyoming, or the Electoral College has led to a couple of the presidential elections in recent years going to Republican candidates who lost the popular vote. You know, that's unprecedented in U.S. history. So those structural things are making the youth and a lot of people feel this is unfair. We need one person, one vote again. We can't have, going back to Jim Crow times, deliberate disenfranchisement of people of color and people that you disagree with, or banning books and that sort of thing, which is happening right now in this country, including here in Texas. It passed such a law enabling partisan poll watchers.
All right, Chip, very good points. Thank you. Let me just put this in a slightly different perspective and then ask each of you to quickly comment on it, starting with you, Terry. But I had the opportunity in the last 10 years to teach corporate governance at the University of Texas at Dallas, and I had a lot of my students who were Chinese. One of the questions I asked them was at the end of the course, do they think that American political system is broken or is it messy? Most of the United States citizens, students said it was broken. Most of the Chinese students said it was just messy. I found that an interesting thing. I also find it interesting that there's a book that's been out now for the last 15 years called The Fourth Turning. Perhaps some of you have read it. And it really says that we are in an area right now between basically 2008 and 2026 in which these kinds of big issues are going to come up regardless of what all of the things you guys are talking about had happened. We did a program with George Friedman last year. His book says the next 10 years from 2020 to 2030 will be the most difficult of our lifetime. And so, Terry, let me just ask you if you see there's something that's bigger than just these specific things that the three of you have mentioned. And just very quickly, yes, no, or maybe.
Whoa, that's a tough challenge right in and of itself. Let me want to get context a little bit. And I think we have to be careful with the words we use, even on a show like this, because my wife is really great. She is my reader for every one of my columns. And she said, do you want people who disagree with you to read your column? And I always say, of course I do. That's why I want to influence them. And then she says, well, add in that second paragraph, the word you used here, nobody on the other side will even listen to what you have to say. And I think what we do is we have to realize it is messy. And every 10 years, you determine gerrymandering is possible, the opportunity to change rules of how we election. But thank goodness we have states, because if we had a nationalized system, you would have total disagreement. Who's in power at any one time could change the entire country's ability to elect or vote in a given way. I think there is value in having a messy system that allows people to care about who they vote for, so that locally in a state or an election, there's a chance for us to influence our particular way of doing things, what the way in which we respond. And then to finally realize one thing, we will never, ever again be in a place where we will not be emotionalized, because speed of communication is so much faster now. It used to be you'd write a letter, but by the time you read it, you wouldn't send it. Now you have every social media. You're angry at somebody said it. You're typing away and you hit send before you think. And I think we have tremendous people saying things they don't even agree with. They're overstating their opinion, and we're polarizing. We're giving people ammunition. We need a system that allows us to look at platforms and what are we for, and how do we find a way to find a solution that works for America? And that's hard to do.
Yep. Robert, I'd like to bring you back into this. One of the things that our founding fathers built into the system was messiness, taking what Terry was saying, and a messy system where compromise had to happen in order for progress to be made at all. How does all of this blend with what you were addressing in Hijacked, and where can we go from here?
Let me just take the last part of that. Where do we go from here? And I have some hope. Our struggle and our pain is what transforms us. And we've got a lot of struggle and pain. And I would agree, Chip, that there's a number of limitations in terms of structural limitations that we deal with, gerrymandering and the way we vote and all of that. But having said that, part of what I'm hopeful about is I see some things that I think have potential to help us move forward in a different way. One is the bad news, the polls, people are really concerned. The good news is people are really concerned. And, when you look at how do we get I don't think this is a problem to be solved. I think this is a movement that needs a next phase of. And I'm hoping that we will get so sick and tired of our division and our demonization that we'll change some. And there's some hopeful signs. If you look at consumption, we might even say addiction to media. Certainly we're been in an off year, but in 2021, consumption of cable news fell by about a third, Fox, MSNBC, CNN, and the major networks down by about 12%. And the number of online responses to political articles was down by 2/3. Typically, you'd say that's bad news. People are less engaged, but we are over-exorcised and engaged. So I am hopeful that those underlying challenges are the beginning of a movement. Nobody's going to start a movement. What needs to happen is the movement needs to be ready to be ignited. I hope those are elements to do that.
Robert, I think you're probably going to be the one to do that. We just have a couple of minutes left, and Chip, I want to get you in here about this question about whether there are forces that are different today that are making these things worse than they have been. Your quick comment about that, and then we need to wrap it up.
Absolutely. I think we all agree that the social media and media pandering after outrage is a huge driver for this, and that's grown. And with data analytics, they're customizing outrage in very minute ways, and that makes it worse. Going to the China point, I think as Americans, we must all realize that China's growing autocratic tendencies, like the national autocratic tendencies around the world. And I used to teach in mainland China. I haven't been invited back the last few years. There's no doubt as to why. I was talking about, human rights and corporate governance in a much more expansive fashion than's popular there. The problem I have is that those demagogic techniques could come back in a more sophisticated, nuanced form and reinforce autocracy. I also agree with Robert, and I wish I was in the groups with you guys. We could talk about this, because a huge part of the solution that we'll talk about in part two, I think, is bottom-up conversations in empathetic ways that really try to understand each other and sidestep that weaponization of identity from the media and social media.
Thank you, Chip. And Jim, I'm going to give it to you to close and just make one comment that after that convention that was held in the late 18th century, Ben Franklin told this lady that we had a republic, not a democracy. So one of the things I want you, the viewer, to keep in mind is it's not just the majority wins all, regardless of which side it is. That's one of the issues. Jim, why don't you close?
I'll be happy to. By the way, a good way to think about a republic is republic. Re-represent public, the people. I'd like to thank our remarkable guests and thank you for watching. And I want you to remember, this is part one. We also have coming up part two, and we're going to focus on solutions with the same guests. So society is advanced by the people who think and care deeply. And that's why we are always talking about and exploring different perspectives on things that matter with people who care.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.